I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we have an interview with Mr. Mike Sable, also known as the Zipper. And if you were following bodybuilding in the 1980s or even the 1970s, Mike was a big competitor during the AAU years, and he competed in the AAU Mr. America, actually winning his class in 1982, which was the first year that the AAU and MPC split off from each other. And the contest that year was won by the Mr. America contest that year was won by Rufus Howard, and Mike Sable won the short class. He also competed in NABA, the NABA Universe. And the last contest I can remember Mike competing in was the WABA Pro World, which was won by Samir Banut. And Mike was right up there. He was in the top six in that contest, and that was a big show. Lance Dreher, of course, was in it. Thierry Pestel, Eduardo Kowak, and Jeff King were in the top five, as well as Samir winning the show. So we've got a really good interview coming up with Mr. Mike Sable, the Zipper, coming up in a second. Before we get to that, I want to mention our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can just go to their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. They have offices all over the United States, but they can work with anybody in the continental United States just through their website. Tell them that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, and they'll give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your first order. All right. So what's going on with you guys? We got the big Super Bowl coming out here in Tampa tomorrow. So this place is going crazy now. I guess Kansas City showed up today, which is filming this on Saturday. And they've got the big game tomorrow. So everybody's really excited about that. First time in history where the Super Bowl is taking place where one of the teams are playing. So Tampa will be the home team at the Super Bowl. So everybody's very, very excited. I work at Tampa General Hospital, and they gave away about 2,500 tickets to the healthcare employees, first responders, nurses, some of the security is going. So a lot of people are going to be in attendance at that event to see the Super Bowl. So that's pretty exciting. I will not be there, but it's going to be really, really exciting, and there's a lot of buzz going on here, and it's going to be nice weather. It's in the 70s out here now, so it should be really, really nice weather. I will be in Alabama tomorrow to visit a close friend of mine. I won't even be here. I'll be one of the few people leaving Tampa while everybody else is coming into Tampa. I do want to mention my mom and dad's wedding anniversary. I forgot to mention that last week. They were married on January 30th. This is their 61st year. They were married in 1960, so they are still doing well. They're staying in this time. They like to travel and have fun, and they're usually in Maui every year, but because of this COVID thing, of course, this was one of the few years where they had to actually stay inside and stay home and celebrate, because they always go either on a cruise or they're in Maui, but hopefully they'll get back to their traveling ways pretty soon, because I know they're dying to do that. So maybe 2021 will finally get back to normal sometime this year. It was Mike Christian's birthday also this weekend. So happy birthday to the Iron Warrior himself, Mike Christian. He's looking good. He's training hard. He's looking really in great shape. So whatever Mike's doing, it's working. He looks fantastic. I was on Dave Palumbo's show this week. We did another Iron History, I think he calls it. kind of like a history lesson for bodybuilding. And we talked about the 1971 NABBA Mr. Universe that Bill Pearl won. That was Bill's last competition that he won at 40 years old. He was going on 41. And he beat out Sergio Oliva and Reg Park. And, of course, Arnold Schwarzenegger was supposed to compete against him. And Arnold was not allowed to compete because that was the year the IFBB started a new ruling saying that any IFBB professional who competed outside the organization would be suspended. So Arnold was not allowed to compete. And 1 week later, they had the Mr. Olympia in Paris, which was promoted by Serge Nubre. And Arnold competed by himself. He competed unopposed because Sergio came over there to compete against him. And he was told he was suspended and was not allowed to compete. And I believe Franco also was there to compete, and he was not allowed to compete. So both Sergio and Franco guest posed while Arnold competed in the contest by himself. So huge opportunity lost from the bodybuilding world to see not only Sergio against Arnold again in 1971, but also to see Bill Pearl against Arnold, which would have been an epic battle. So we're always wondering, we're still wondering to this day what would have happened if that showdown would have happened, but it never did. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed last week's episode with Jerry Branum. We did like six episodes in a row with Jerry Branum. I even got an email asking if Jerry was my new co-host. But we did our year-end review, and we covered the years 1970, 1980, and 1990. And usually we can get that done in two or three episodes. But me and Jerry talked for so long that we ended up having two parts for every episode. So it ended up taking six episodes to get through it all. So I want to thank Jerry for all those episodes that he appeared in. And he's always a great guest, and I always love having him on the show. And I was just editing the last one today for YouTube, so that should be up this week. And that was the 1990 part two that we had on last week. So I got some video clips on there and some pictures. So if you enjoyed listening to the shows on the podcast, check out my YouTube channel as well, which is under my name, John Hansen. And you could see the video clips and the pictures that I added to each show that we do. And we should have some good episodes coming up this month, in the month of February. Next week, we'll be talking to Phil Williams, who's also another one of my favorite guests, and Tony Pearson. And we've got them on together. Phil and Tony know each other, of course, from competing back in the day. And brought on Phil and Tony to talk about George Turner, one of our favorite gym owners. George owned Turner's Gym back in St. Louis, the 1970s. And Phil and Tony both trained there when they were teenagers. So they got some great stories about George Turner. So that was really a pleasure talking to both of those guys at the same time. And I'm supposed to talk to Jack Neary later this month. Jack was one of the greatest writers for Muscle Builder magazine back in the 1970s. And I remember reading Jack's articles when I was a kid, including the famous 1980 Mr. Olympia report. I think Jack was the first one to report on that contest. And it was a real controversial contest, of course, and Jack gave us all the details about what went on, and that was shocking at the time because we had no idea that Arnold won in such a controversial fashion. So we should be able to get Jack on, and I hope that interview takes place because I'm really anxious to talk to him. And I'm also looking forward to talking to John DiCola, who was the 1969 IFBB Mr. America winner. And when we had John Taylor on last year, John was the teenage USA champion from 1980. And John was trained by John DiCola when he was younger. So I was able to get a hold of John, and he said he would love to come back on the show. So that would be a great history lesson to talk to John DiCola because he was around during bodybuilding's real golden era in the 1960s. So I'm looking forward to both of those interviews. So keep your fingers crossed, and hopefully those will take place later this month. All right, I did not get any emails this week. If you guys ever want to send me any emails, just send them to naturalolympia@gmail.com. I could read it on the air and could also make some comments under the YouTube page, which is, again, under my name, John Hansen. All right, so that's all I got. So here is our interview with Mr. Mike Sable, the Zipper. Mike is going to talk about competing in the late 70s, early 80s. And all the fun he had doing all those guest posing and seminar appearances, especially over in Europe. So here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have a very special guest with us this week, Mr. Mike Sable. And Mike was a big figure in the AAU and the WABA competitions back in the 70s and 80s. He won his class at the Mr. America and the Mr. World. So, Mike, glad to have you on the show, buddy.
Well, I'm glad to be here with you, John. It's good to see you. And hopefully we can clear up some illusions in this sport and tell you a few stories that will maybe rock some people's worlds and get them to understand that bodybuilding was a fun time back then.
Yeah, it sure was. That's why I'm doing a show. I'm trying to bring back the old days because those were the great days, you know?
Well, the days today, I mean, if I have competitors I'm putting in shows, I will go to their shows. But to me, bodybuilding is just, it's just taking a negative direction. They need to go retro and go back old school, because it's like all of the mistakes that I was one of the inventors of the mistakes in that era. And then we corrected the mistakes. And now you're finding the bodybuilders going right back to doing the same exact thing we did 35, 40 years ago.
Okay. Like what kind of mistakes?
Well, just in their training and stuff like that. I mean, we went from, I remember with Arnold and all these people, we all talked, we're doing like 20, 30 sets of body part three times a week. You remember those days?
Yeah.
And then they said, no, that's overtraining. We're going, well, you're getting ready for shows, but you're not really gaining a lot. You got more muscle delineation and separation from the years of training, but you weren't making gains. And so we got to go back to two times a week. Well, two times a week meant if you were doing 30 sets three times a week, now we'll do 45 sets twice a week. So we don't lose sets. And then, you know, you're aching, sore, still not making gains, getting injuries. And all of a sudden you go like this. Well, wait a minute. Maybe they're right. We got to cut back. So we cut back from 30, 45 to 30. And it became like a nightmare. You're chasing how many sets you're doing, how much you're doing. I mean, back then, even though with our education stuff, we didn't realize that training intensity and training volume has an inverse relationship.
Right.
As your volume goes up, your intensity has to come down. If your intensity goes up, your volume has to come down. Otherwise, you're overtraining. And then it was like, oh, no, you didn't even have to train them twice. You got to train them once. It was like withdrawal symptoms. It was like going through a drug withdrawal. What do you mean I'm not doing 30 sets? But my last 6-7 years competing, I trained each body part once a week, hard. Because I go and I can train legs hard. And I know I'm going to get rest, you know? You got to get rest. So people go and train their upper bodies. Your shoulders and your arms are working on every upper body part. So why are you training hundreds of sets on arms and shoulders when you're working on every body part anyway? So it was kind of an illusion we created in our head, and we really tried to straighten it out. And a lot of my competitors, the most they'll ever train a body part, females not, is twice a week maximum.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I think we just got kind of lost, and everybody's more is better. Well, more is better. We're in the United States, but more is better is not the answer in this sport.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah. Right.
Not at all.
So you see a lot of more competitors going back to that, doing more volume and stuff.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of top competitors in the gym. I'm training out a lot of the social influencers and stuff like that. Now they're coming to me. I mean, it's NFL players, NBA players coming going, Mike, you know, you guys had such great physiques. And we're, you know, I said, well, look, and I'll show them a couple ways to do proper technique, proper biomechanics exercise. They'll go like this. Oh, my God, I've never trained. Exactly. This is not about moving weight. It's about moving muscle. It's about moving muscle biomechanically properly and breathing so you get proper neural impulse from the mind to the muscle so you get an efficient workout. Your proper posture. And they start doing things like that. They go, I can't move hardly any weight, because you never have. You're working biceps with your shoulders, your forearms, your back, your legs. It's like you're doing jumping jacks while you're doing them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So try to get people back to where you're not going to get internal or external injuries, dropping a weight on yourself or having another problem, you know, internal where you're tearing something. You know, get them to understand that it's about moving muscle. Move the muscle intensity for short periods of time, because your glycogen levels in your muscle, blood, and liver only stay up for about 30, 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. So when you're training hard over 35 minutes, you're kind of spinning your wheels and you're losing muscle, because your body's going to definitely go over and start burning muscle tissue for energy and hold on to the fat, because that's your body's survival mechanism. It's fight or flight.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that they're getting a lot of their information off of YouTube and stuff, and we don't have the magazines anymore, so... You know,
I'll go to Instagram to find out how to train.
Right.
You got people. If you have people on Instagram, they're standing on a Bosa ball. They got a cable in this hand, a dumbbell in this hand. They're kicking with this leg. One of those. What are you isolating? What are you trying to do? Are you a gymnast getting ready to do a triple backflip?
Right.
Weight training. It's isolated. It's concentrated. And even back then, we didn't do that. We cheated and everything. But then you learn that cheating injures you. You know, it's funny that all of the guys from my era that have had injuries, it's all the shoulders, the knees, this and that. I was always lucky. My legs were really strong. So I never had a problem, but I didn't have a problem sitting my butt on my calves when I did squats. And that's what I did. Everybody else is part way down and stopping it with their tendons and ligaments rather than letting their body go through the full range of motion. That's what creates the gold guy tendon response and creates muscle fiber recruitment. So you got to get the understanding. Stop watching Instagram, going to Facebook, reading articles that anybody can post.
Yeah.
You know, start understanding the science. I mean, this is science. It's science of nutrition, training, cardio, and understanding how those fit together and work at an optimal level. If you're not working at an optimal level, you're wasting your time.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, let's talk about your career, Mike. Let's start at the beginning. How did you get involved in bodybuilding?
Okay. Well, I was up running Valencia Health Club up in Valencia years ago, back in the early to mid 70s. And there are shows coming up. And I came out of a cycling background. I was a competitive cyclist. I played football, lots of different sports.
Okay.
And I was thin. I didn't want to be thin anymore. You know, it's like I had big legs, but the rest of my body looked like it belonged on somebody else, like a 9-year-old. And so I said, you know, I got to start training. So I started training, and being a competitive athlete all my life, I said, I don't want to just train. You know, I see all these competitors. I see all these guys are looking good. So I want to look like that. I want to have some goals, set some goals. I wasn't a non-goal oriented person. Even to this day, I still have goals.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm going to train real hard, and I'm going to do this show that was out in like the middle of nowhere up near Valencia in California, sunny Southern California, all of you in the snow and cold and everything. You're not.
No.
But
no.
Anyway, it's been raining and cold here in Southern California. So I'm lying to you. But so I went to this show in a little town called Valverde. And I got my trunks and this and that, and I practiced my posing. I was working in a gym with Steve Davis and Harvey Keith back then.
Yeah.
And they helped me out. But I think after the show was over, they thought I was just a janitor that found a pair of trunks and got up on the stage and posed. You know, so these guys look great. I just started. I was still thin. And now I'm thin, put on some weight, and I was thin and smooth. I wasn't, right. You know, in top competitive shapes. So I said, you know, I've got to work harder. My subconscious programming for all the sports I've been in is, if you've got to get there, you got to do what the other people are doing. So I went to people like Arnold and all the top people in the world. I said, my grandpa told me, if you want to be and he was a good athlete. My grandpa told me that if you want to be a great athlete, or you want to be great in anything, go to the best in the business. Walk like they walk, talk like they talk, think like they think, and do what they do. Mm-hmm. So I'd go down and I'd sit in the Main Street gym, the old Small Goals gym, and I'd draw pictures. Now I'm left-handed. I can't write or draw. And I'd draw like stick man pictures of bodybuilders training and take notes. And then they'd come over and look and go, what's that? You? I'm too thin. I've got to gain some weight. I'm too stick man. But so I just started going to the best people, and I would hound them and bug them until they gave me the right information. It's either you're going to see me over and over and over it again, or you're going to help me out a little bit. So I remember many meetings at the firehouse with some of the top bodybuilders in the world and having them help me. And, you know, then they said, you know, you're going to make it. You've got the heart, you've got the dedication, drive, discipline, desire from your other sports. So keep on moving, dude. You'll be okay.
How old were you at this time, Mike?
Oh God. 19, 20.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. 19, 20 years old. Okay. And, I said, I don't want to be thin anymore. I just don't, I if you're going to do something, there's got to be a reason.
Yeah.
You're going to ride a bike, you need to know how to balance. You're going to go in there and train with weights, and you got to know what to eat and what to do. But I wasn't adverse to the nutrition, because from all of my other sports, my grandmother and grandfather raised me. They were my rock. And they cooked very healthy for me. You know, so I wasn't used to eating cakes and ice creams and cookies and candy and stuff like that. My grandmother raised 13 sisters and brothers. She was the oldest. Wow. So my grandmother was very adamant that you eat healthy. And she was in great shape. I mean, my calves came from her. Some of my legs, she was an amazing, she walked 10 miles a day till she was 80 years old.
Wow.
And she hated cars. So she'd go out and she'd walk, and then she'd call me and go, I'm like, I go, where are you? So I'm on Ventura Boulevard, which is like 8 miles away. I go pick her up and bring her home. She walked up. Right. You know, so I had a good backing in people that did what they preached. You know?
So you got into bodybuilding a little bit later then, right? You were doing more bike riding, you said?
Yeah, I was into bike riding. I played football. I played all kinds of sports. Okay. You know, so I was an athlete, and I always wanted to be an athlete. I mean, I was driven to be an athlete in different sports. So I went from riding a bike 200 or 300 miles a week to bodybuilding. People said, that's hard. I said, you've been on the road at 4 o'clock in the morning riding a bicycle for 100 miles before you got to go to school? I mean, let me tell you something. So, and I developed a lot of techniques in bodybuilding that a lot of my students use and a lot of people have used. I was probably the first bodybuilder that did sets of 100.
Oh, really?
And people, that's of 100. Yeah, one of the first. There are some other ones. But, you know, and an optimal set would be, it's not like just put 10 pounds on a low row and do 100 reps.
Yeah.
I would put on like maybe 100, 110, and I might get 50. Three deep breaths, I might get 10. Three deep breaths, I might get 8. Until you hit 100, you're not done.
Right.
You know, now that's a workout, because you're working the muscle from the tendon depth to the surface. So you're hitting all parts of the fiber and the tendons, and people don't realize your tendons, ligaments are 33% weaker than the muscle. So the brain's shut off or not doing the movement, what takes over? The tendons, ligaments will take over. We'll do this for you. And where do you get injured? Elbows, wrists, lower back, knees, ankles. It's always the joints. So I tried to keep always focused on, even at the time I was young, is get the central nervous system response to get more in coordination with the muscle and the tendons, ligaments, keep them strong to avoid injury. And believe me, I had my injuries. But it was a matter of learning and constantly reading. And I wasn't on Instagram then. I wasn't on Facebook. I was reading. Right. I was reading. You know?
So did you do a combination of the heavy training, the typical heavy, you know, 8 to 10 reps along with the 100 rep stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I did all types of training. I did heavy stuff. Like what I would go like 1 week a month, real heavy.
Okay.
And then I go moderate, supersets, compound sets, you know, switch it around. Keep switching it around.
Yeah.
And I always believed that every couple weeks, you got to switch it around. I never went in, John, with an idea that, hey, I got to do bench press today, incline dumbbell press, and I got to do declines. No, I went in and said, what exercise do you hate the most? That's the first one I did.
Okay.
What exercise do you hate the second most? That's the next one I did. What exercise do you not feel strong in? That's the third one I did. You know, so it's a matter of getting your head in that place. Everything you're strong on, for legs, for me, when I started competing, my legs were strong as hell. You know, they were strong as hell. And, you know, it wasn't anything to go and do a set of 500 in squats or 450 or 40. It wasn't. I was strong as a bull. But that's old Platt's era, touching your ass to your calves.
Yeah.
Not halfway down.
Yeah.
So I used a combination, always chain it, because I think you get stale. You get bored and the body stops responding. It gets used to something. It's like, well, I don't need to do any more than this. You're doing 20. I'll always do 20, but you try to do 22. You can't, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's a matter of pushing beyond those barriers and understanding that if they say something's impossible, it's only impossible until you do it, you know, and you don't have to be the best of the best. You just have to be the one that can do what you do. And you're the only one that can do it.
Right. Okay.
You know, so it's a matter of just getting that in perspective.
Yeah. How was it working at Valencia Health Club with Keith Harvey?
They were great people. I mean, come on. You're in any gym. There's controversy. There's crap going on. Come on, John.
Yeah.
John, you've been around, you know. But it was fun. It was good, you know. And it was good. So I remember Steve Davis told me when I started working up there and just everything, you're probably not going to ever win any shows. Well, that was my biggest inspiration. I mean, I love Steve. Steve and I are good friends.
Yeah.
And he was my biggest inspiration. He had to turn around and write a rebuttal article in Iron Man magazine 1 year to say, hey, I told this kid he couldn't do it. A year later, we won the Mr. Western America. And that was the amateur IFBB Mr. Western America with Andreas calling a lot of top competitors.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I compete in all the organizations. I always felt I understand organizations trying to make money, but I don't understand me saying I want to control you or you saying I want to control you, you know, and I end up with Nike sponsoring me and stuff like that. But it's like I'm competing to compete. And I look at these guys and I'm locked into, quote unquote, one organization. I get it.
Yeah.
That's what your choice is. But I traveled in Europe for 2 years. I was making money hand over fist doing exhibitions, seminars. I lived over there. I was in every country over there. If bodybuilding did nothing for me, I was able to travel the world and be with the people, different gyms, different countries, different cities, all over the world, China, Middle East, Africa, everywhere, South America, everywhere. And I did it and made money while these guys are going, if I win another show in this organization, I'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the
bodybuilders today may not understand it, but back then there was all these different organizations. You had the AAU, you had NABA, you had WABA, you had IFBB. Yeah. You know, so
I competed in all of them.
Really different. Yeah. Oh, you competed in all of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I competed in the amateur IFBB. I competed in WABA. I competed in NABA. I competed in AAU. You know, it was like I'm a competitor.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to do me any favors. If I deserve fifth place, tell me four reasons why. I'm good.
Yeah.
But if I deserve first place and you place me fifth, I want four reasons. I want to know. You know?
Did you get any political kickback on that? You know, like were they prejudice against you because you went in this organization. Now you're going over this organization.
That's a good answer, John. Good answer.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. Thank you for answering my question.
Right.
Of course you do. I mean, you know, and there's so much ego involved, and ego stands for one thing, edging God out.
Yeah.
So you run from your ego. That means edging God out. So I look at this. If I was ever going to put my heart and soul and my being into the control of 9 judges eating cheeseburgers and drinking shakes while they're judging you, and I'm a fool. I did this for me. And the bottom line is, and I tell all my competitors, all my girls, I've got a very good girls team now. My girls are doing incredible all over. And I tell them, the winning is not done on the stage. It's done in the gym. If you believe this gym and you know you did as much as you possibly could, you've already won. That's called a show.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put your heart and soul into those judges' hands. They're judging 400 people in a show now. They're dizzy by the time they see 100.
All right, right, right.
You know what I'm saying. It's crazy. And that's why I feel like, and don't get me wrong, I support all these organizations.
Yeah.
I'm not, hey, I'm this or that. Did I feel pressure at times? Sure I did. But yeah, that's in business and sports and anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I felt like, look, I've just got to stand up for my pride, my morals, and my integrity. And I don't think you're going to find that I sacrificed my integrity, John, anywhere in the sport, or I mm-hmm. kissed anybody's butt so I could win a show. That right. didn't in my mind think make me feel like I'd won anything.
Yeah.
If I won a show because they set it up for me, what did I win?
Right, right.
Won nothing.
Right.
I'd be sitting there looking at these beautiful trophies I have them going like this. Oh, that was given to me by that guy. That was given to me by that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. it made no sense to me. I mean, you got to and bodybuilders. Remember when they were gonna boycott the Olympia?
Remember yeah.
that year?
81. Yeah.
They said we need to start a union for bodybuilders. God, that would have been a blessing.
Yeah.
Well, bodybuilders actually get paid like other athletes.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And what happens? All these guys are going to boycott and you got five or six going, okay, now we can win the Olympia.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
We're going to go in. What did you win? You didn't compete against anybody tough.
Right. Right.
You want to win, true. Compete against the best guys.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, what have you won? You've won nothing. I'd rather place third in the show with top guys than place first because nobody was in it.
Right. Exactly. Right.
You know, that makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's about maintaining integrity and knowing that I got to sleep at night and knowing that my students and stuff are going to listen to me because they know I'm telling them the truth. Mm-hmm. And they know, you're asking my students. I don't bullshit them. I tell them the straight up truth.
Yeah.
You're either in or you're out. If you want to get in shape, that's 100% effort. If you want to get in real good shape, that's 125% effort. If you want to jump into the world I was in, you better be ready to suffer and hurt because the bottom line is going to hurt a lot and it's never going to stop hurting until mm-hmm. you're done.
Yeah. You
know? So you got to be willing to say, that's okay to me because in our sport, pain is love.
Yeah.
Pain is love, brother. You know, I have a saying. I said, you know, you must train insane with pain and strain to gain. If you don't, you won't. Good, better, best. Never let it rest till your better is best is better and your better is best.
I like that.
You're either in or you're out. And I tell my students, look, I'm not here to babysit you, to sweep your floors, to tell you you're wonderful, to put Photoshop pictures of you on. Get your butts in shape.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anything. I'm dealing with one of my girls. She's getting in great shape. She just was, you know, she's trying to tell me, oh, yeah, I'm doing everything right. No, you're not. I'm 66 years old. No, you're not. Okay. You're 32 years old. I can train you into the ground any day. Just use proportionate weights that I use. You don't have to use what I use.
Right.
But I can still train you into the ground in less than 10 minutes. And you tell me you're training hard. All of a sudden, she stepped up and bam, last 2 months, looks amazing.
Yeah. Are you coaching a bunch of people out there in California?
Well, I'm very, very picky about who I coach.
Okay.
One of my girls, Josie Gunn from Sweden, was out here, did the West Coast Classic, won at her true novice, won all three bikini classes, true novice, novice, and open.
Okay.
And my other girls took a couple seconds, couple thirds. We're probably the best team out there with four girls. There's girls out, teams out there with 30 girls. None of them in shape, but they got 30 girls.
Yeah.
You know, so I look at that and go, that's accomplishment, you know, and it wasn't me. I coached them. I gave them all of the proper direction because obviously I have some background in kinesiology and nutrition. I'm the vice president of the United States Personal Trainers Association. I teach courses all over the world at the university level.
Okay.
And I catch on to my students right away, whether they're mentally prepared. And I'll tell them, this is not for you. If you want to continue training, that's good. But the bottom line is you're not mentally, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, or physically balanced enough to step into this world, spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical balance, then you need dedication, drive, discipline, and desire to excel. You have to have those. If you don't, you're kidding yourself. That's what's led to the, let's call it vitamin supplement usage in our sport.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what I said, John?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
It's crazy. People are dying, dude.
I know.
They're dying. I'm watching over the last couple of years. I'm 66, so I know I've been around a lot of years. But I'm looking and going like this, what the hell is going on?
Right.
These are top-level bodybuilders, 26 years old, 30 years old, 45 years old, and they're dropping like flies.
I know.
You know? I've got a resting heartbeat right now of 49. My blood pressure is like 120 over 60, 65 anytime.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I went through things over the years, but the bottom line is I realized also there's a way to get around this and a way to straighten this out. And that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Well, I think you hit on the head too, when you talked about the hard training, you know, I mean, that's when I look back at the '70s and the '80s, everybody trained hard. And then the supplement usage was minimal. You know, it seemed like it was back then compared to what it is.
It seemed it was.
Yeah.
Remember, you had to go to doctors for what you're doing.
Right.
And the bottom line is now the guys, when they tell you they're completely clean, they're on 10 times what we ever took in our lives.
Yeah. I know.
When they say they're clean.
Yeah.
You know, so that, I mean, that's the distorted part of the sport. And look, I appreciate anybody who works hard. You know, you look at these top guys, they've worked their butts off. There's no doubt about it. But what are you winning when you're doing so much?
I know.
And what health risks are you taking? I can make a contest called Mr. Outer Galactica. You're the only competitor. I'm the judge, and you win. But you know, it's like you've got more to your life. You're 35, 40, 45 years old, 50 years old. And what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, and I see some of these guys now that have retired. You look at them and go, my God. I mean, I feel like I was suicidal if I dropped down to like 130 pounds. I'm about 210 now, probably about 6 or 7% body fat. Mm-hmm. I mean, I stay lean. I stay lean year round.
Yeah.
I'll tell you quick, at the USA in 1979, I won my class there at the USA. It wasn't the AAU. It was the, So I came back and they called me on the phone and said, Mike, can you come down and do an exhibition in 3 weeks? We've got a show coming up. Well, after that show, I went and ate. I was like 205 in the show. And I was about 235 when they called me. So I said, I can't do that. I come down to a seminar, man, but I've gained too much weight.
Yeah.
So I go back down to the show or to the seminar. And this kid comes up after, I'm signing pictures. Kid comes up after and goes, hey, Zipper, what's going on? I was at the show when you went. I said, I remember. He was jumping up and down, yelling. He said, I remember. He goes, can you take a picture with me? I said, sure. Can you sign some pictures? I said, how much are they? I said, they're free for you. You know, you're my biggest fan. So I signed like 3 or 4 pictures. I take pictures with his family and everything like that. And here I am weighing like right now, right down probably about 242.
Okay.
I'm 5'7". Okay. Kid looks at me and goes like this, Zipper, you looked amazing at the show. What did you do? Stop training? I went. I was big. I said, no, but you'll never see me in this shape again. I told my buddy, I said, call the Fountain Blue Hotel in Miami and tell them that that refrigerator with the candy bars and liquors in it is there when I get there. I'll throw it over the balcony. Get it out of my room. I went back to the hotel. I had egg whites, chicken, sliced tomatoes, and a baked potato.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I've never been out of shape. I said, never, ever again.
From that point on, ever since.
He wasn't being nasty to me or anything.
Yeah.
He just saw me on the show. And now, like, whoa, you know, so what he correlated to at 12 years old is, oh, you must just stop training, rested for a while.
Yeah, you don't look the same. Yeah.
So a 12-year-old turned my life around.
Wow, that's crazy.
You know, and I stay in shape now. I eat like I eat the same way I did when I was competing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm not able to train at 66 years old like I did when I was, you know, 25, 30, 35, but mm-hmm. I still train hard. I keep moving. If I go in, I'll train like 35, 45 minutes, but I'll do 500 reps in that period of time.
Okay.
You know, yeah. I just keep on moving. Don't, you know, I want to go in there and I want to get it done while my blood sugar levels are up, while I feel good, while I'm focused. When you start looking at the clock, you start counting how many more sets you have left over, you're done.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah.
Wake up. You're not looking at the clock and going, how many more sets do I have? Or looking at your watch because you're ready to train more. You're ready to get the hell out of there.
Right. Right.
You know? Yeah.
Tell me about your first show, Mike, the Gold's Classic. Was that your first show, Gold's Classic in 76?
I did that show. I did the show over in, remember I told you, over in Val Verde?
Yeah.
They thought it was a janitor and they gave me a pair of trunks. Yeah, the Gold's Classic. I remember, I don't remember that show. I remember I did it. Where did I place in that one?
Third.
Third. Yeah, I remember that. Who
Andreas Colling won the...
Yeah. And I beat Colling in Western America the following year.
Okay.
Yeah, I beat Colling and he was in my class. I beat him and I won the overall. I could pick up the trophies, but Dave Draper made them. You know, he's a furniture maker.
Yeah.
These trophies are solid wood, like this big. I mean, I had to take the trophies apart to get them in the car. But they're hand done from driftwood when they took out Pacific Ocean Park Pier.
Oh, my God. Really?
Got the wood out of there, and he did it. And I mean, they're beautiful. They're beautiful. I should hold one up for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he made Arnold's furniture. I didn't know he made trophies too.
Oh, yeah, no, he made the trophies. He made Arnold. He made stuff for Franco. You know, he did a lot of that stuff. And but great furniture maker. But he made these, and I've thanked him forever since then. You know, Dave's a great guy. I mean, he had his trouble. He had his troubles throughout the years. But I'll tell you something, man. He did well. He did well.
Yeah,
he did well, and he's good now.
Is he? Is he doing good now?
He's in great shape.
Really?
Oh, not big anymore. But you know, when you're in the 60s or 70s, you're not going to be big anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been trying to get him on my show, but I guess he doesn't want to do interviews.
Yeah, Dave's kind of a quiet guy.
Yeah.
You know, if you know him well, then yeah, but if you don't know him well, he's kind of quiet. Kind of quiet.
Yeah.
I'm just the opposite. I'll just keep on talking.
Tell me about the I'm gonna go down some of your contests here. The 78 Junior America that Tony Pearson won, and you got you were fifth place in the short class. Dave Mastrocca won your class. A lot of great names. I'm looking over this list. Tony Pearson, Robert Reese, Gary Leonard, John Brown. That was a great show. A lot of great guys.
Good show, but controversial for mine.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Well, how was it controversial?
I'll just be straight. I was basically told if you don't train at certain places, you're not going to win anything.
Okay.
Okay.
Golds was having some influence back then, huh?
I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
Were you still training at the lunch?
Everybody was trying to control. You know that.
Yeah.
Everybody was trying to control.
Were you still training at Valencia Health Club all the time, Mike?
Oh, no. I trained at Valencia Health Club through like, 77, 78, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So tell me about the Mr. USA in 79.
79, that was a AFAB show. And in that show, that's 79.
Bob Reese won the overall?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they had a show, the Robbie Robinson class, on the same time. And I beat Bob Paris.
Bob Paris? Wow.
I won the show and beat Bob Paris. And it was a fun show because I like Bob. Bob's a good guy. And we came out, we're in the pose down. Now, I'm not going to pose waist to shoulders with Bob.
Yeah.
Are you psychotic? But, you know, so what he would do is he'd go waist to shoulders. I'd go leg in front of me, most muscular to the side or something like that. I was paying attention. I paid attention to what I did. And when he turned to legs, I turned to hit legs with him. He looked at me and says, son of a bitch, you got me. Then everybody started yelling zipper. I'm going, well, you know, you played into my game. I didn't play into yours. I'm not going to do that. You know, but I was shred to the bone. He looked great in that show, but you know, he's looked better at other times too.
Yeah. He was third beginning. Yeah. So how did you, now tell me about the zipper move. A lot of people that don't know what I'm talking about. This is a move where you do with your legs, where you look like you're zippering up your quads and then you flex your quads at the same time.
Yeah, the cross-trations in my thighs, you know, I mean, I started doing a pose where I'd run my finger up my thigh and like a zipper.
Yeah.
And people said it looks like a zipper coming undone. So people started calling me the zipper. That's the zipper. That's the zipper. Well, it became like a trademark for me.
Yeah.
And what was funny is I'd go to other shows and people would do that shot and the audiences would boo if I was there.
Yeah.
Because it became like my shot. Okay.
Right.
And I just found out last week from Breon Ansley that Chris Cormier stole that shot from me.
Right. You're right. He did do that.
Great guy. We're good friends. Yeah. But anyway, so I started doing the shot in my routine, and that's what people would wait for. When I was traveling to Europe, they'd wait for that shot.
Yeah.
You see the zipper shot, you know? It was like, I could do it. I could have had a fat upper body, but as long as I do the zipper shot, I'm good.
Right,
good.
Right.
But so it became like my trademark, necklaces, hats, everything.
Wow, that's awesome.
And now I'm like Madonna and Prince, you know? People call me Zipper. If somebody says Michael, 9 people are going to jump up.
Right.
You know, everybody's Michael.
Yeah.
So it became good. Yeah. The earlier years, I don't cry politics. You know, I'm not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Where I placed, you know, the audience saw.
Yeah.
The people saw.
Yeah.
You know, so it's all relative.
So you were known for coming in always in shape, always ripped. You always had the good legs. That was your, that was kind of your trademark, right?
Well, I had to be. I didn't have that waist to shoulder ratio like a lot of guys. I had to come in shredded. I had to come in better than them. And I did.
Yeah.
I came in much more shredded, and the bottom line is my legs were so powerful. I mean, Platts and I were known for having the best legs around at that time. Mm-hmm. And the bottom line is that if somebody's going to beat me, they're going to beat my legs. And these guys would play into it. Mm-hmm. So the judges would say, Mike, you don't want it anyway. They're trying to flex legs with you, and that was stupid.
Yeah.
You know? Right. So it was a very, very good asset, but that's years of cycling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always heard that, you know, whatever activity or sport you do before you get into weightlifting or bodybuilding, in our case, that's the muscle that grows the fastest.
Oh yeah. My legs would grow walking down the street.
Right.
You know, I remember some people said, let's go to Disneyland. And then my thighs were measuring like 30, maybe a little over. Okay? So I put on a stretchy pair of Levi's. It was like a stretchy type Levi material. By the end of the day, they were threads, the whole inside. And I started rubbing my legs together.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But you know, that's what we do.
Right.
That's what we do.
Right. No, and you're always known for coming in condition. Like, how did you do that? I mean, what kind of diet were you following back then?
Well, I think that, you know, most bodybuilders, figure, fitness, they never, ever find out. I mean, tell anybody, if you want to be the best at something, take 3 months out of your whole life and do something perfect.
Okay.
And see if you're going to turn back then. When I said that I was eating 8 ounces of chicken or 8 ounces of fish at a certain time, that's when I was eating. When I was in Europe on tour, I mean, they knew they had to have my food ready for me. I had my little igloo ice chest. When it was time to eat, I don't care if it was in a business meeting at a teak table in a corporation, I took out my food and I ate. Mm-hmm. You know? So I was very disciplined about that. And I never ate an ounce more or an ounce less. I never got that. So I stayed dialed in at all times till the point where it became, this is my life. This is what I do.
Yeah.
You know, people say to me, don't you like cake and ice cream and donuts? Stuff like, of course I do.
Yeah.
And they'll go, well, why don't you just like go in? I have one junk meal a week, but my one junk meal a week might be yogurt with some toppings.
Yeah.
You know, and all that does is give me a boost mentally.
Yeah.
And they said, why don't you just go ahead and scarf and this and that? I said, you know, the main thing, there's only two things people live for, to create pleasure and avoid pain. Mm-hmm. That's all we live for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So their pleasure is I'll go eat the cake and the ice cream. My pleasure is I don't have to spend 2 hours on a treadmill tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
To get back to ground zero. So what I looked at is this. If somebody, like I go to somebody's house and say, oh, I made a German chocolate cake. So I take one bite. That ain't going to hurt me.
Right.
That's good.
Right.
You don't want another piece? No. If I eat one bite, it doesn't hurt me. The next 29 tastes exactly the same. I get what it tastes like. You know, so people just take their minds and learn to change and learn to understand. Change how you think.
Yeah.
I don't care if you have cackle like a chicken or bark like a dog. Change what you're thinking. I can't. Success comes in cans. Failure comes in cans. Every time you say you can't, I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I believe it.
How was your metabolism back then, Mike? Were you able to get ripped pretty easy or was it real tough?
No, I had to work because I went up in weight when I started. I came to gain a lot of weight. It wasn't that it was hard. As long as I maintain that dedication, discipline, drive, and desire, you know, and I always question myself in that. Do you want to do this and change everything you've done for the past year or two? So it was good. I mean, I can gain weight easy. I'm probably about 205 right now, 200 to 205. I could be 230, 240 in 3 weeks.
Yeah. Okay.
I can gain easy, but you know, fat doesn't turn into muscle. Muscle doesn't turn into fat. So why the hell do it?
Right. Right.
Absolutely. For a moment of pleasure. Yeah. I'm going to eat these cookies. You know, okay, there's an hour on the treadmill. I'm eating this cake. There's another hour on the treadmill. I'd rather go like this. I didn't eat it, and I don't have to do the extra hour on the treadmill. I'm good.
Right, right, exactly.
I'm good, man. I'm good.
So when you were competing in the 70s, or Mike, what was your goal? Was it to be Mr. America like a lot of people, or were you just doing it for the fun of the competition?
Well, at first, I wanted to see if I could get to that level where I could stand up there with these guys and at least look like I belong there.
Okay.
So it's more like that. You always have big term goals, you know. And then right at about 77, when I won the Mr. Western America, I started saying like this, you know, I'd really like to do the Mr. America, or do the Mr. Universe, or do the Mr. World, and not just do it, but I'd like to win it. So my coach, who was Glenn Cunningham from Canada, dual PhD, he was a professor up there at Marianapolis College. And he was my coach. And he said, Mike, and he's a very quiet guy, never yelled or screamed. And he probably the smartest man I know in this sport. Okay. He died a few years back, but he wrote books for collegiate level on training, nutrition, everything. Very, very brilliant guy.
Okay.
And I miss him dearly. But said, look, Mike, what do you want to do? Okay. This is what you've got to do it. Are you willing to step into that arena and play in that arena? I said, of course I'm willing to step into it. I said, no. That was answered too quickly. How would you know? You know, so I finally decided I wanted to do it and said, look, what do I need to do? Like in 77, after 77, I need to really bring my legs down so my upper body would get more in balance with it.
Okay.
You know, so I overtrained the legs. my legs were annihilated during the year for like a year to bring them down. And then, you know, then said, look, I've got to step up and I want to do this. I don't want to just do this to win a competition. I want to do this so I can travel and go see other places. Because the reason I was lean when I was young is because I had no money. You'd be lean too if you couldn't afford to eat. You know, I mean, I literally, there was times like a year, year and a half, right? Egg whites, I'd go buy cases of eggs and I'd buy bags of potatoes, boxes of oatmeal and tomatoes. That's all I ate.
Yeah.
For like a year straight.
Yeah.
A year straight. Nothing else. Cause I couldn't afford the chicken and the fish and the, but something, you know, God gives you signs. It's like, you're doing something good. And later on down the road, you're going to have to help the next one in line. So I let him go. If bodybuilding did anything for me, I traveled the world, was able to see the whole world, be with the people. And now I'm helping others to better their lives. What more can you say? And when my grandmother passed away, which was the toughest day of my life, she said to me, Mike, she said, I told you when you were a little boy, if you help one man to better his life in your life, you're a good man.
Yeah.
So when I leave this earth, you've helped thousands. So that right there, that's all I need to know.
Right. So when you were getting into the sport, then you thought of traveling and going around the world. Did you see other guys doing that in the magazines or?
No. I saw that very few guys were doing it. I'm going, I want to be that guy. Really, you go into Europe at that time, they didn't care about seeing the European bodybuilders. They wanted the Americans from California that had been to Gold's Gym and touched Malibu sand.
Right.
You know, I remember I was living in Swindon, England when I was over there. Swindon's about an hour and a half north of London. Okay. And it's a college town. And it's where the railroads were actually developed, the steam railroads.
Huh.
Okay. And the, you know, and when I got there, a man named Bob Hiseki, he's the one that was my promoter over there. I mean, he set up stuff for me all over the place. And, you know, and I looked and went, wow, this is a great opportunity because now everybody wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can't go because of COVID-19.
Right.
But that will go away too, I firmly believe. But, you know, that these guys weren't going over there. John Brown was over there. I was over there. A few other people. So we were booked solid, man. We're making money hand over fist. I go in the gym in the morning and train chest. They pay you $500. Go in another gym somewhere else in the back in the evening, they pay you $500. That was $1,000 a day to train.
Unbelievable.
You know, 2-3 times a week, you know, when you're in these different towns. Then you're doing seminars and getting paid. You're doing exhibitions on the weekend. I mean, at times I wore myself out because I was in sometimes 20 cities a month.
Wow.
You know, but the bottom line, I had something to say. I had a background. I had an education. So people like, listen, I just didn't get up there and go, yeah, I'm a bodybuilder. I lift a lot of weights and eat a lot of steak. You know, yeah. I actually talked to them and made them feel like I never, ever, when I was on a stage or I never want people to feel that I'm more than them. I'm no different than you. I just did something and worked hard and made it to this level, but I'm not better than you.
Yeah.
You know?
So when you said they pay you like $500 to work out, you would just go into the gym, work out, and the gym would pay you $500?
Well, the gym would be 300 people there, and you train chest in the morning. They put your weights on for you, take them off, and they're watching.
Wow.
They're watching. Even up until like, because I was going over to Poland every year for a couple of times, helping one of my very close friends who passed away at 50 years old from a heart attack. No, it was a genetic heart problem.
Yeah.
Konrad Gossa. And he had a very, very successful system over there called the Gossa system. And he wrote books, everything. So I'd go over there and do stuff with him. And to give you an idea, I went to the airport like 7-8 years ago, because I went over there like 10, 12 years, 7-8 years ago. And my plane out of Dusseldorf, Germany to go to Warsaw arrived late. So I'd wait 4 hours to get another plane. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I get another plane. I fly into Warsaw. I get there like 11:15 at night. This was a weekday. Mm-hmm. There were 200 people waiting at the airport that had been there for like the last 7 hours.
Wow.
And I look at that and go like this. That's worth more than any title you could ever win. Go win all your titles. I have the respect of these people. They're going to sit and wait. And then you could come out of the airport and they applaud. Mm. You know, I was like a superstar over there to them.
Yeah.
So, but it was, you know, walking down the streets in Lublin, Poland, which is where I stayed when I was there. People come up. Can I take a picture with you? We're in Kazimierz Dolny, which is a resort town in Poland on the Vistula River near the Baltic Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking down the street and they stopped a wedding and the bride and groom came out. I've got the pictures. I can send it to you. The bride and groom came out to get a picture and wanted me to sign their autograph. So I signed their book.
Yeah.
You know, the signing book for weddings. And then about 200 yards down, another wedding is stopped. I'm going, this is worth more than any bodybuilding competition win. And then I'm in the middle of the town center. I'm on a Sunday and it's beautiful and everybody's out with their goods and stuff like that. And they're doing Polish dances. And they maybe get out there in the middle of the center and doing Polish dances, mm-hmm. like people around applauding. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know, but those are the fascinating things to me. I mean, I got stories I could tell you that would blow your mind.
Yeah. So why do you think that was, Mike? Do you think it was just because they didn't know what bodybuilding was? The public didn't know really much about bodybuilding. They found it fascinating, or it was because the physique was different?
That I'm there, and they promoted. This guy's Mr. America, Mr. World. He's here.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So you're from America, and they love that. They love that. Like, when I would go into clubs in Swindon or any towns, and I'd go into clubs like to just meet people and stuff, like little meet and greets, they were serving Malibu rum all night long.
Mm-hmm.
At Case of Malibu Rum, that's all where people were drinking. Why? Because I was there. I'm from California. I live near Malibu, that dirty little beach over the hill. Right. But you know, it's like the people, just the respect. The respect. You don't get that here.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
You don't get that here. How many drugs do you use? When do you use them? You know, it opened my eyes to the world. I was in the Middle East. I was everywhere. And the bottom line is, people in all those countries, I'm not treated like a king because who I wasn't there, but the bottom, they were good, nice people. And mm-hmm. guess what? Everybody hates their governments. Everybody hates their governments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. what do governments do for us anymore?
Right.
What do they really do for us?
Right.
You know, and you know, it's the people are great people and they have no hostility towards anybody else. That's the weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to John Brown. I had him on the show before, and he was telling me about how big the seminars were and, you know, how big the guest closings were and how the crowd reaction was. It was really crazy.
Oh, crazy. You go to some shows. I remember going to a show in Holland, big arena. There's like 3,000 people, and there's tables. They're eating dinner and drinking.
Yeah.
For like 4 hours before the show. Imagine that.
Yeah.
it was crazy. I guest posed, but I went out. I was razor sharp. Did my routine. I go off and they're applauding. So I come back out, another minute routine. They had music all set up, come out another minute, leave, come back. I'm in the dressing room and this is in Holland and they give out the award. So I figured, oh, they're calling me. I got to give out the awards. They want me to come and give out the awards. I'm not even dressed yet. I'm just getting out of my trunks. So I said, we'll give you a couple minutes. So I come out and I can show it to you. It's right here. I come out and it was a Mr. Holland or something like that. And they said, Mike, we'd like you to hand out the awards. So I hand out the awards and they get to the overall. I'll get teary eyed. And they said, Mike, the guys who won their classes have all decided from your exhibition, it was so amazing because I went out four times.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The overall Mr. Holland Award is going to you this year. I have the trophy. They actually gave me the trophy.
Wow.
They gave me the trophy. So where do I have it? I think I have it right around here. Hold on one second, okay?
Sure. Yeah.
I'll be right back.
Yeah.
This is it.
Wow, cool.
Mr. Holland. So I have the Mr. Holland trophy. How many bodybuilders have that?
Right.
It says on it, overall winner, Mr. Nord Netherlands, NPBO 82, 11, 12, 21, 82.
Yeah. Wow.
So, you know, those are treasures.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, go win all that you want. But the bottom line is those things. And I'll tell you one real quick story that you're going to love. Oh, I got two quick ones. Do we still have time?
Yeah, we got 15 minutes. Yeah.
Okay. So I was in Kanoki Heist, Belgium.
Okay.
Okay. For an exhibition, posing exhibition, and a seminar. And Kanoki Heist is on the North Sea. And Kanoki Heist is a fishing port. It's beautiful. All the houses are brick.
Okay.
Every house is brick. They all look the same, but they're beautiful. And so anyway, I get into town and they take me to the hotel. Hotel is right on the North Sea. Okay. And they say, well, show me my room. It's two brothers that run the hotel. And it's spectacular. Okay. Mm-hmm. Not giant, but spectacular. So they take me to my room. Say anything you need. And here's your table. My table is on like a round area over the ocean.
Wow.
That was my table for the whole weekend.
Wow.
So he tells me, he says, well, I hope you don't get upset, but we have a wedding here. I said, that's no problem having a wedding. Plus, I'm not going to complain anyway. They said, we're having a wedding. Yeah, but the weddings last 3 to 4 days. And it starts on Friday, and it ends on Sunday night or Monday. It's okay. So anyway, all the wedding people are coming in, the whole 9 yards. They get this beautiful area set up. I think they were like 22, 23 years old. And so anyway, I come down to get dinner, and they bring out halibut with tomato slices and onions and all on a silver platter. And I've got sterling silver and china to eat on. And they ask, is a piece of fish okay? Hell the hell I know, right? Mainly egg whites. Yeah, it looks good. That's fine. Fixed my meals for me. Everything was perfect. No salt. They made me like sauces with no sodium in it, no oil. So I have my dinners, and that's how every meal was. So I go to my room, and I get a knock on the door. Said, because he goes, well, Mike, everybody knows you're here. I go, why? Well, there's some kids downstairs want to take you for a walk around town. So before they tell me, they go, we don't walk around town. Every house had the poster with me on it. Every single house in this town had the poster. Yeah. People are coming outside waving, let's take pictures. Hi, yeah. How are you? I go back. He goes, the bride and the groom want to know if they could take a picture with you. I said, sure. No problem. So I take some pictures with them. They're in the hall where they're going to get married. They're taking some pictures, stuff like that. And they want to know if you'll come down tonight after dinner. The wedding's going to be at 8 o'clock tonight. If you could come down and witness the wedding and be there. So I said, sure, no problem. I'll come in. I'll have my dinner and I'll meet you guys over there. You have drinks? I said, no, I don't drink. So anyway, so I go down there. I see the wedding, beautiful wedding, beautiful couple, stunning. And so I'm getting ready to get up and go back up to my room, knock on the door. They would like to know if you'll come down and pose for them.
At the wedding?
At the wedding. I said, how in the hell can I say no? Right. So I went over, put my trunks on, put on a robe, came down. I did a posing routine. Then they stood on the side of me when I did some of my posing.
Yeah. You
know? But who's done that? I know. Who's done that? Right. Who's done that? Then the funniest one, I was with Mike Quinn, Carol Bennett, Miss Great Britain, Larry Bernstein. You remember Larry?
Yeah.
Myself. Chicago. And I put together a routine because we were all in Swindon together, living together. And I put together a routine. I said, look, let's stop doing these individual routines for the road. Everybody's seeing the same thing over and over again. And bottom line, to the point where it's kind of goofy.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so I said, let's put together, I'll put together a routine and music. And we'll put this together and have a show. Mm-hmm. Okay. This show became very popular in Europe, went all over. So anyway, we would come out, Larry and I, with ties on, cuffs, and our trunks to Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top.
Right. Yeah.
Larry, I come out first, then Larry comes out the side looking like, what are you doing? You know, like we're gonna get in a fight.
Yeah.
And then we hit like 5, 6, 7 poses together. You know, just Sharp Dressed Man by ZZ Top with his cuffs on, collars. And then all of a sudden the music would scratch. And Tammy Wynette, Stand By Your Man.
Uh-huh.
Carol Bennett would come out, cowboy boots on, her bikini. She was beautiful, okay, with a cowboy hat on. And she started posing behind us. We look at each other, Larry and I, what the hell's going on, man? Loud. What are you doing? What are they doing? Okay. And then after about 10 seconds of doing that, we'd fall into like 6, 8 poses together, all in unison.
Right.
Then I don't remember the disco song, Freak Show. Uh-huh. All of a sudden, the music would blare out, and the show run, and Mike Quinn would come out last, behind, up above on the stage. Okay, and we'd pose together, and we'd go out in the audience and go up and down the aisles. We got 10, 15, 20 minutes standing ovations.
Wow.
Okay. Great. I mean, that wouldn't stop. Here's the funny part. We've got to go to Edinburgh, Scotland. We had just guest posed on Friday night, and we're on our Friday night in Hamburg, Germany. And we're all four leaving to go to Edinburgh, Scotland. We have to go through London.
Mm-hmm.
We have to go to Edinburgh. So anyway, we get to the airport. I should have been like O.J. Simpson running through the airport, but I wasn't. We get there. Too late. I said, the plane's still on the ground. Well, they've already closed the gate and stuff, so there's nothing we can do. I said, no big deal. We'll get another plane into London, right? Because we got to be there at like 7:30 at night in London. And everything's small there.
Yeah.
Next plane doesn't go out until 6:30. Or 6:15. I go, what? We got to be in it. So we fly from there. We get to London like, 7:05. There's police waiting at the bottom with their lights on. Take all four of us off. We've got your bags. And they put us on another little Piper plane to go to Edinburgh. Okay. So we fly into Edinburgh and we get off the plane. They're waiting for us. Police cars, everything. The president was here, and they go, before that, they go, how much do you weigh? They sat us in corners of the plane because it was a little small, like 17, 18 seater. They said, we need to balance the plane.
Right.
I'm going, none of you guys better move. Just stay back where you're supposed to be. Right. And he's laughing his ass. We're laughing. We fly in. We got police cars, and we get in the police chief's car. Okay? He's got Edinburgh, Scotland. The roads are not wide. They're going 90, 100 miles an hour down the street. We're in the middle car with Scottish police hats on, windows down, 28 degrees, hooting and hollering. People are on the side of the street applauding. We get to the auditorium about, I'm going to say 8:30, 8:35. The promoter is standing up in front of that auditorium sweating. He's got 4,000 people, and they're going to all ask for their money back because they're paying to see that exhibition. Okay, right. We get there. And the police all come in the whole night. We had like 20 police with us. We go in, and the announcer goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, they're all here. Mike Sable, Mike Quinn, Carol Bennett, and Larry Bernstein, the regular show." Place erupts, goes crazy. I mean, nuts. I'm going to send you a post somebody sent to me last year about the show. Okay. I'm going to send it to you when I'm done.
Okay.
So they go crazy. These guys, they're going to be here. We do our show, and people in the audience dancing, everything. They just let the music run, just go. Blast, so much fun. That show became like synonymous with us over there. The police chief comes up to me and goes like this, "Michael, what happened? Tell me exactly what happened today." So we're in Hamburg, Germany. We had lunch. We got out there. The plane was still there, but they had locked the gate. So we couldn't get out of Hamburg till like 6:15. We had to fly into London. From London, we had to go to, because he arranged this whole thing, because the promoter was his friend. Mm-hmm. That's a damn good thing, Michael, because the bottom line is he's going to spend the rest of the weekend in jail if he lied to me. You know? If he lied to me, he was going to go to jail for the next 2 days. We had a blast. We had so much fun.
Wow. Over there.
That's what bodybuilding is, man. Have fun. We're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time, John. We're not here to be miserable, right, or be unhappy. Right. I did what I did. I won what I won. I'm proud of what I did. But the bottom line is, had I not won, I still did a lot of stuff all over the world.
Yeah.
I'm still doing it today, to this day.
I have memories.
Yeah. Oh, amazing memories.
Yeah.
Amazing memories.
Yeah.
And a real quick one. I was in Heidelberg, Germany. I had a seminar. They said at 5 p.m.
Okay.
So I go hiking up the mountains. You got all the little castles and stuff like this. I'm hiking up the mountains in boots. And, you know, it was warm. So I had shorts on and T-shirt. And all of a sudden, I hear at the bottom of the mountain, "Mike Sable, Mike Sable, Mike Sable, please come to the bottom of the mountain. Mike Sable." I'm going, what the hell? They're going to arrest me? Did I go to the wrong castle or something? They think I'm stealing the king or queen? So I come back down. They say, "You have a seminar at 2. It's 5 minutes till 2.
Wow. I'm
5 minutes from my hotel in a car.
Yeah.
So I went back and cleaned up real quick, threw my stuff on here. Here's my itinerary. He said, "Right, they made a mistake. They didn't tell you." So I get there like 2:30, 2:45. Nobody left. Everybody's excited as hell. But the bottom line is just crazy stuff like that. And I look at that and go, those are the memories I want to keep.
Yeah.
Remember those days.
Yeah.
They're just fun. And I had so many things like that.
Yeah, well, the enthusiasm of the fans is what really stands out, you know, with these stories. Oh, it's crazy.
They're the ones that gave me the ability to do what I did.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I never put my heart and soul into the judges. You know,
yeah.
I listened to what they said. You know, right. That was more important to me, because a lot of times it's a rookie or a novice that's going to be able to tell you what's real and what's not real.
Yeah.
But they've never seen it before, so they look and go, "Oh, that looks good, and that doesn't." You know, mm-hmm. And that's reality. So I had a blast. I had a blast in my career. I have a blast with what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
I have a lot of fun with what I'm doing now. And I'm going to continue having fun until I drop off this earth. When I drop off this earth, I had a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, as a matter of fact, I got a little saying to read to you real quick.
Okay.
You'll love it. It's not too crude. Life's journey is not to arrive at the grave safely in a well-preserved body, but rather to skid in sideways, totally worn out, shouting, "Holy shit, what a ride." You know, I'm gonna tell you something. I believe that, man.
Yeah.
I have fun every day in my life. I have good people in my life. I don't let negative people into my life. I surround myself with positive. I have lots of friends. They're friends, but I wouldn't spend time talking to them, because right. All I do is tell you their problems.
Right, right.
And I get it. You know, yeah. In this world today, we've got to be able to motivate and get people to understand that you can get through anything.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to be smart. You got to, you know, people are, you know, now with this COVID and stuff like that, they're drinking and taking drugs and sitting in their house and everything. And we're wondering why they're getting sick.
Yeah.
Come on.
Right.
Come on. Don't take a brain surgery to figure out why you're getting sick. Go do something for your immune system. Eat good. Work out. Get your blood flowing. Keep yourself healthy.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
And, you know, that's my mission, is to help the next one in line, help them to better their lives. If you don't want to, I get it.
Yeah,
I'm not mad at you because you don't want to better your life, but I've never done a seminar or anything in the world where I always ask people, is there anybody in here that doesn't want to look better or feel better? If you don't, then I have nothing to say to you. I've never seen anybody leave.
Mm-hmm.
We all want to look better. We all want to feel better.
Right.
Oh, we want to put a couple of years on our lives. And I look and go like this now. Now the baby boomer crowd is wondering, because of all the drugs and pot and shit they did back then, they're wondering, how can I put a few more years on my life? I've got a lot of them as clients. But I'm picky with my clients now. I'm doing well. I've been, and this last year has been tough because, very little income.
Yeah.
But reality is my people are always there for me, because a lot of my clients have been with me, 30, 35 years. I trained all of Sinbad's family and, and these are people that are, they're just good people.
Yeah.
And if they don't want to follow my ways, go follow somebody else's ways.
Yeah.
I'm not here for to train you and have you tell me I saw something on Instagram.
Yeah.
When I got my girls, I read this on Instagram. I should be training hips and thighs 4 times a week. I said, you need to get another trainer and you should do that. Do that. And then they'll tell you need to take steroids and you need to do this and you need to do that. Pretty soon you're right up with all the other girls with a deep voice and not looking quite like a woman anymore. I mean, come on. My girls are all drug free, no diuretics, no nothing, and they're beautiful.
Good. That's great. Yeah.
I don't want to train women that don't look like women.
Right. Right.
And I'm not slamming. You do what you got to do, but you got to also accept the ramifications of what you've done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whether it be positive or negative. And the bottom line is you're going to want to be healthy in the end. Nobody ever goes to the hospital and goes like this. Well, I did good. No, they go to the hospital going, I hope we get a few more days.
Yeah.
Well, understand what you're doing to yourself might not allot that.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully people can see your experience and your knowledge and your enthusiasm and they'll be drawn to that. And the old school ways are the best.
See yours too.
You're
a superstar too, dude.
Thank you.
I don't know. I'm looking at greatness. You created a lot of greatness in your life, and you did it the right way.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, no, that people got to know. I mean, you're a legend.
Thank you.
You're a legend, and it was great with great appreciation and love that I did this show. Because I care about you. I care about what's going on out there. I care about the people.
Yeah.
And thank you. I mean, I'm sitting here with a legend, being able to talk about what we both love.
All right, Zipper.
Both love, absolutely, man.
Same way.
Absolutely.
Well, we didn't even get a chance to talk about a lot of your contests, so maybe we'll have you back on again in the future, and we'll go over
Let's
that.
Do it.
Okay.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Right. We'll do that for sure.
All right, buddy.
God bless.
Thank you for your time, and we'll hopefully have you on again soon.
We'll do it, always. Right. Okay, thank you.
All right, Mike. Take care. Thanks,
buddy. All right, John. Talk to you later.
All right, buddy. Bye.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to Mr. Mike Sable, the Zipper, for such a great interview. We should have Mike on again because he wanted to talk about some of his competitions, but we didn't have enough time to continue. So hopefully we'll have Mike on one day again. He was a great guest. It was great talking to him. I never got a chance to meet him before. So I want to thank our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. I want to thank all our generous Patreon donors who generously donate money each month to keep the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast going. If you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon donor, you can just go to my website, bodybuildinglegendshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the Patreon link. Next week, we'll be joined by Mr. Phil Williams and Tony Pearson, and they're going to talk about George Turner's Gym. I got some great stories to share, so I hope you guys join us for that. Until then, enjoy the Super Bowl tomorrow. Stay healthy, enjoy your workouts, and we'll see you guys next week. Take care.